Bill King became a member of Scranton City Council in 2022, becoming president earlier this year. Prior to serving on council, Bill was a Scranton School District teacher, principal, and superintendent. He was also principal at Montrose Junior Senior High School and superintendent of the Lakeland School District. Among the many leadership positions in the area groups and organization he serves, Bill may best be known for the role he's held since 1996 as president, founder, race director of the Steamtown Marathon. He's a Scranton Central graduate who lives in Scranton with his wife and three daughters. Welcome to the News Engine Podcast, Bill.
Thanks, Ed. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming in. I was excited for you when you were elected to council and eventually became president. For listeners who may not know, what are the duties of Scranton City Council president? I imagine that you have all the same responsibilities as the other council members, but with a whole bunch of other stuff tacked on top.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Well, you know, one of the key things, I try to work with our city clerk, Frank Boldenberg, to help to create the agenda and review some of the legislation that comes up from the administration. There's that. I try to meet with the mayor once a week. We typically will do a Zoom meeting or in-person meeting to kind of get a sense of what they're working on and to go through a list of questions that we as council may have and get updates on in progress on initiatives that are being worked on at the city level. So maintaining a good open line of communication with the mayor is key there. And obviously I have to run the meetings and maintain, order in the meetings and decorum. And that seems to become fairly natural to me just because of my background, having been a superintendent and, kind of have an understanding of Robert's rules and how to run a meeting.
So. I almost imagine that your days as a school principal probably come into play a little bit as well.
No two ways about it. And that's the other thing too. A key part of being the president is, communicating with the other council members. Really, council's not allowed to meet if there's three of us together somewhere. It's one thing if we're at a political function or something like that, but really you can't meet like with three members or more outside of council chambers because that would be a quorum. And, and certainly no decisions or anything could be made, outside of those chambers.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys can just hang around and talk about city stuff. It's kind of got to be done out in front of.
Right. Or so, you might send a text there. I'll typically pick the phone up and call, but the other piece was that, part of the reason why I think I became the president, sometimes like the nature of my job allows me some flexibility during the day that maybe other members don't necessarily have. Like, Mark's a school teacher and he's tied up all day, every day from like 7 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And same would be with Tommy with his job and Jessica's actually works up in Toby Hanna in the healthcare industry as a physical therapist. Jerry's got a little more flexibility now that he's on council. He owns his own business, but still, he's out in the field. He's doing HVAC work every day.
Sure.
So, I'm fortunate in that, I have to travel every 2 weeks to Harrisburg to our main office for meetings, but I pretty much work out of my house now and have meetings at various school districts around the area.
Yeah. And you were elected in 2021. You began serving in 2022. You became council president earlier this year, but you barely had a year to get the lay of the land, get fully up to speed, working on council, learning the business of council, learning, more about city business, getting to know the other members of council. It's been a fast year and a lot has happened. Have you even had a chance to come up for air yet?
No. Yeah, it has been a whirlwind, to be perfectly honest. I was fortunate that I knew Mark McAndrew. He was on the school board in fact, he was school board vice president when I was superintendent in Scranton. Tommy Schuster came after I left Scranton, but I've known Tom for quite a while. And Kyle Dunne was on the school board when I was superintendent as well. So I had a good relationship with all of those guys. And Jessica, I had met her a couple years ago when she was first running. And I actually remember first time I ever met her was at Zumo's and, I wished her well and, thought she'd be a good candidate. And, I have a pretty good rapport with all the members on council.
So you actually had a little bit of a relationship before you started, which I'm sure made it an easier transition for you.
Oh, it did. Yeah. Because, you know, when you don't know people, a big part of working with them is building those relationships and building a trust relationship. So all of them kind of knew what they were getting with me, and I knew what I was getting with them. So, I will say I'm really proud of, how professional our council is, and, the way that they handle themselves as legislators. And it just, everyone treats each other with the utmost respect, and they treat the audience and the, you know, all the citizens that come up to speak with the utmost respect. And we do our best to try to get answers for the public when they come in to speak. So,
yeah. And that could be a council chambers in Scranton can be a tough room. And I don't remember you having any issues with any of the taxpayers that have been in the room over the past year, but did any of that change since you became president? Do you immediately get a little bit of a target on your head, or has that been pretty quiet for a couple of months?
No, as I said, you know, some the speakers, I have to say, you know, they're passionate about what they're concerned about, and they bring a wealth of knowledge from various, you know, industries or from their backgrounds. And, you know, we respect everything that they bring to us, and they point some things out sometimes that we might not be aware of. And, you know, that's greatly appreciated. So we never talk down to any of the speakers, and quite frankly, they don't talk down to us, and they haven't. And that's also part of maintaining, you know, decorum and order. But there are council rules, and everyone seems to abide by them. And part of my job as the president is to, you know, make sure that people follow council rules. But I've never even had to bring it up. Like, I've never had to say, hey, listen, you're violating. I haven't had to use the gavel, really.
I've asked this. We had Mayor Cognetti was up here. Kyle Donahue came up after he completed his term. But they both said something similar. And that was a great respect and appreciation for the folks who attend those council meetings. And for folks who are listening to this, who may not attend council meetings, or maybe have never attended one or watched one. You just kind of touched on that. The folks who are in those meetings are very well prepared. They're very well versed on city government. They have a unique knowledge to the history and background of some of the things that you're discussing and working on with the city. It's pretty impressive to see. And while we may not always agree with what is being said, we can never doubt their dedication or loyalty to the city. I think a lot of times we all want the same stuff. It's just a different path that we're taking to get there.
Right. I agree. And, you know, I will say this for myself. I learn as much from them as they might learn from me as the city council president. So I think they bring a lot to the table, quite frankly. And they challenge me, they challenge my colleagues, and they make us think. And, you know, sometimes they point things out that, wow, there's so many things that you have to concentrate on. It's, you know, I think are we the fourth or fifth largest, you know, city in the state of Pennsylvania? So, you know, it really is. There's close to 80,000 people in the city, and it's, you know, there's a lot going on, and it's complex. And as you said, some people come in and they're really focused on certain things, and they're really knowledgeable on, you know, certain aspects of what's going on in the city. So they bring some great information to the council, and, you know, give us an opportunity to either have an answer for them at that moment or say, listen, give us an opportunity to look into it. We'll get back to you next week.
Yeah, they're certainly not afraid to ask a question. Bear with me on this. Yeah. This is going to seem a little weird, but I am going to get to a point here. I remember what I thought was an odd or even a unique exchange during a council meeting last year, where council members were discussing the new privacy screen that was applied to the glass next to the door where you all sit. And that sounds like a trivial thing, but it seemed like every single member of council had a different opinion on the window and whether or not the screen should be there. Some, and you might have been one of them, even volunteered to move your seat closer to the door. But my point is, I thought the whole thing was interesting to watch because it showed how you all have the same concerns, but there are very different, intricate differences on how you approach things. And you eventually all figured it out, but not without further discussion and certainly not without compromise. Is that a little bit of a microcosm of the day-to-day ins and outs of council? Something as simple as privacy glass that not everyone agreed on, but you ultimately came to an agreement.
Right. Yeah. We all, you know, several of us had the opinion that it should be clear glass so we could see who's out in the hallway. And others felt like, hey, I'd rather have it opaque so they can't really see. But my point in that argument was, listen, everybody knows what's on the other side of that glass. And my experience, you know, in public education, and I've been to at least three national school security conferences. The first thing, I'll give you an example. When I went to Lakeland as a superintendent, I walked into the superintendent's office and I noticed that the desk, and if you, the superintendent's office is actually in the high school at Lakeland Junior Senior High School. So when you walk to the right, that's the side where the superintendent's at. They had the desk with your back to the front window of the school. And I never sat in that seat, not once. The first thing I did was move the desk over to the side so I could see what was going on out in front of the school. And I always had eyes on, like, if there was an intruder, if there was a problem going on outside of the school, I wanted to be able to see that. Whereas in this situation where there's opaque window, you don't know who's out in that hallway, what's going on out in that hallway. Is there a fight? Is there somebody arguing? God forbid, does somebody have a gun? I want to at least be able to see what's coming at me.
And your perspective of being a, you know, a leader in a school district, and certainly, you know, we're all concerned about, you know, kids and kids' safety. Mm-hmm. Your perspective and your experience with that probably gave you a unique look at that, just a little tiny thing, that little piece of glass.
Yeah, it did. And I just, you know, safety was always a big issue for me as a superintendent and a principal. Up at Montrose, they knew exactly, once the bell rang and the announcements were over, I walked the entire school and checked every single external door of that building to make sure that that building was secure. And then I'd do it, you know, probably two or three more times before the end of the day. And it served a couple purposes. It got me around the building to see teachers and see kids. And it also, you know, I was making sure that our building was safe and secure. So
I'll bet you word got back to parents. I'll bet you parents knew that you did that, and they probably appreciated that.
I'm sure. I also did bus duty out in front of school every single day, no matter how bad the wind was blowing or snow. But I just felt it was good to be visible and be out there and make sure everybody got off the property and the buses and the cars weren't hitting each other. And, you know, it was like a traffic cop at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, an extra set of eyeballs in a situation like that. Definitely not a bad thing. Yeah. Hey, you know, we see you at meetings every Tuesday. But that's probably the smallest but most visible part of the job. Tell us a little bit about what a city council person does when you're not at that 1 or 2 or 3 hour meeting each week.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like this morning, I get a text from my sister. She said, listen, I was coming out of Mass and so-and-so saw me and asked if they could have your number. And she said, well, I'm not going to give you his number, but you give me your number and I'll have him reach out. And I knew the individual. And gave them a call today, and you know, they were expressing their concerns about the new zoning and up at the you know, CMC is their Geisinger's looking to expand up in the Nahant Park area, and they wanted to express their concerns about that. And you know, so that was a phone call that I took this morning to discuss that issue. But yeah, guess what? You go to the supermarket, you get stopped, you go. So, you know, I have my phone with me, and you know, you have a notepad, and so I'll type in. If I don't type it down, I'm going to forget it. So, like, somebody will say, hey, listen, you know, I don't know if you've seen the street out here, but it's a mess. You know, can you guys get it on the paving list? Yep, absolutely. I'm going to look into it for you. You know, I'm driving down Cherry Street from East Mountain. One of the neighbors, they're having serious issues where the water's backing up into their basement, flooded. And, you know, I had DPW up there and met with them. And, you know, we came up with a solution to help kind of get that resolved. After he made sure he did everything he needed to do on his property, it's determined that it's something going on with the pipe out in the street, that a drainage pipe with the city. So things like that, you know, meeting with DPW at various spots where, you know, if there's an issue and I know the neighbor, and just to kind of be there as a liaison to talk to them. It's, you know, you're like the other evening, I was attending the Scranton Planning Commission meeting. I didn't have to go to that, but I felt it was important that I be there because, you know, the zoning ordinance, you know, was coming up for a vote. So you try to get the neighborhood association meetings when possible. other people, for instance, somebody had a concern with the new business that opened and they're looking to get permit parking by their home. So I personally went on a Friday night at 8:50 in the evening and videotaped what was happening, you know, since this business is open. And
To see it firsthand.
Right, to see it firsthand. So things like that. You take a lot of phone calls. You get a lot of people emailing you and making requests for whatever, paving, potholes, drainage issues, runoff. So it's...
It's a big city. I mean, it's, you know, 75,000 or so people live here. 26 square miles or so. I'm ballparking it there.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of stuff goes on with when you have that many people in that, you know, kind of a space. And not everyone knows exactly how to get in touch with a member of council or even someone at City Hall. And most of us probably go through our tax paying or residency lives and don't necessarily need to reach out to someone from the city. But it's good that they're able to get in contact with you. So, you know, what's the best way for a citizen who doesn't happen to bump into your sister somewhere? You know, how do they get in touch with someone from council?
They can contact either City Hall at the clerk's office, which is 570-348-4113. And that's Frank Volenberg, who, by the way, is outstanding. He is a gentleman. He does his job above and beyond. He's extremely responsive to the administration. He's extremely responsive to the council, and he's extremely responsive to the citizens. Really good at getting back to people. But also, like, my email would be wking@scrantonpa.gov. And the others would be mmcandrew @scrantonpa.gov and so on and so forth.
So they all follow the same naming convention. Exactly. You mentioned Frank, and I marvel at Frank. I don't know what his notepad looks like at the end of the night, but I know there are, I'm probably underselling it, but dozens of questions and things that Frank has to go back and research, look, people he has to call, people he has to track down, issues he's got to find out. So he's kind of a little bit of an unsung hero of city government and city council in particular.
He is. And you know, there's rarely a day I'm not on the phone with him. And he's just, I'll tell you, he's perfect for that job. He really has a great demeanor, and he has great people skills, and he's organized, and he's just, we're very fortunate because, you know, once again, you know, city council also, these are part-time jobs. We all have our day jobs.
Right.
So it's, you know, you're trying to intermingle, you know, your day job with, you know, the city council position. So it's,
I would imagine that in this day of electronic communication, it's made getting in contact with you guys a little more manageable or reasonable than it probably was 20 years ago. But having somebody like Frank in the seat that can kind of, you know, be the traffic cop of this kind of stuff is got to be super helpful.
We're very fortunate to have him. It's been a blessing to our city council and to the city of Scranton, quite frankly.
He has a great way about him. You've been here about a year. What's on the top of your list of things that you'd like to accomplish in your term? You're only about a year in, so you've got plenty of time to accomplish your dream list of stuff. But if you went to the very top of your list, is there something up there that you say, you know, I've got 3 years left to figure this out? What kind of cracks that?
Some of the key things I want to see happen. We're having a lot of issues with stormwater, and we're doing stormwater studies. We're using ARPA funds to do stormwater studies and then go out and have design work done. And then we ultimately put the work out for bid to address the storm. Stormwater is a big issue in the city of Scranton because obviously you have East Mountain and you have West Mountain. We know that water flows downhill. And
sure.
Anyone that lives above the next house and the next house and the next house, you fix the guy's house up here and the guy below him ends up having an issue. And then the guy below them end up having an issue. So, that's a big issue for the city of Scranton. And I know that, you know, we have a major project going on over in the Kaiser Valley. And now over on East Mountain, you know, we have a high level study happening. We have, the engineers HRG is working on that. We use the ARPA funds to do the study and ultimately the design. And one of the things about stormwater, you can't apply for like federal funds, or like state H2O funds, they're called, unless you have already done a study. So it has to start with the study. And we're fortunate to have those ARPA funds. We actually have $17 million dedicated towards stormwater. Doing the study allows us to apply for additional funding to actually address the problems. So
I'm glad you mentioned the studies, because I think there's some misinterpretation of studies from time to time. And I do hear people gripe, and I hear, you know, I read comments, or I, you know, I follow certain people on social media, and I hear that repeat over and over again. Oh, not another study. But you just framed it perfectly. It's got to start with the study. No study, no money.
You don't have a study, you don't qualify for these grants. And as we know, there's tons of infrastructure money that's coming out of the federal government. There's money at the state level, but there's requirements before you can apply for those. And the study plays an integral role, and it's critical to that application. So, that's extremely important. And I know people do, like, oh, yeah, another study, it's brutal. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a necessary evil in order to get the funding to be able to, you know, A study is useless unless you're able to actually address the issues that are found within the study.
Right. If you don't come out of it with actionable stuff that you can just go out and do, or find out what's reasonable to something that you can actually wrap the city's hands around, so to speak, right, and accomplish it. Yeah. It's just a study in a vacuum, really.
Or we could have a study and it just sits there because we don't have the money to address any of it. Well, the study actually helps you to get the funding that you need to address it. So it's a necessary evil, but that's a big thing that I want to focus on. And, you know, one of the other things, and this might sound extremely mundane, but my uncle had said this to me when I was a young kid growing up and working at Cox Sheet Metal. His name was Jack Cox. He said, "Bill, you know what I want from my city government? I want my streets paved. I want my garbage picked up." He goes, "I want all the basic services taken care of. You know, I want a good police force, you know, a professional fire department." And that's one of my goals, to continue to be able to, on an annual basis, pave as many streets as we possibly can. Now, we live in northeastern Pennsylvania, you know, expansion, contraction, our weather. Yesterday it was absolutely, it was 56 degrees. And today it's like 32 or 28. I mean, so that has an impact on blacktop, and, you know, throw all that water and snow, expansion, contraction. It doesn't last long once you pave it. But the bottom line is, I want to see, and I'm working with the city to, there's two lists every year that we have, the OECD list of paving, street pavings, and then there's the city list. So it's one of my goals to each year to pave as many city streets as we possibly can. And then also people say, "Well, why you just pave the streets and now the utilities are digging them up? Why didn't you plan properly?" Well, they do. Our city coordinates with the utilities when they decide to pave a street, and they may hold off paving a street if they know that there's a major project going on. The problem is sometimes you pave a street and a pipe burst.
Right.
And there's not much you can do, right? It's an emergency, right? So one of the things I want to do is make sure that we're taking care of the basic services, making sure we have a professional police department, which we do. We have a great police department, a great fire department, which we do, and a professional fire department. Make sure that our DPW make sure that we have enough people working at DPW and that they have all the equipment that they need to be able to do the job that they need to do and to provide the services to the citizens so that they feel like they're getting something for their tax money. So that might seem like a little mundane, but that's important to me, you know. So another thing that I really want to work with the mayor with and with my fellow council members is to try to increase the number of payments in lieu of taxes, pilot money. Last year, we only had $250,000 of payments in lieu of taxes. So one of the challenges that I always knew that we faced when I was the superintendent of schools, I was actually the president of the Pennsylvania League of Urban Schools, and Scranton, like other cities like Easton and Wilkes-Barre and Hazleton and Bethlehem and York, Harrisburg, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, most cities have the largest portion of nonprofits or non-taxable properties. So, for instance, in the city of Scranton, you got federal buildings, you have state buildings, you have city buildings, you have school district buildings. Now throw all the churches in there. Now put five colleges in there. Some hospitals are nonprofit, others are not. You have a huge number of not-for-profit properties, which might is close to 38%. So you really have an eroding tax base. And it's also where you have the highest need in the city. So like when I was superintendent, you know, an urban school district like Scranton has a large percentage of ELL, English language learners, a large percentage of special needs students, which all cost more to be able to provide the services and the extra services that they need to get those students where they need to be. And economically disadvantaged students, probably 75 to 80% at this point. So I think it's important that some of those nonprofits, that number one, we approach them, not just send them a postcard or send them a letter, hey, how about making a donation? Actually set meetings up with them and go and sit down with them and say, listen, here's what we're looking for. Here's what we need. And if you can't give us a check, maybe you can do some in-kind services or help us with the park project or help us with something else. That's one of the things that I want to try to improve in the city of Scranton.
Sure, build a real relationship with some of the nonprofits that are out there. And you said that the amount last year was $250,000. Yeah, it's got to be a bigger number, right?
Yeah, that's low. That's low.
Tell us about some of the successes the city has had in the past year. I think it's easy for us to sit back and point at things that we wish were better, but talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that maybe we've done in the past year. Or you can go back further if you like, but some of the things that you think are headed in the right direction.
Well, the number one was just before I got on council, as we came out of Act 47. So that was 30 years that we were, you know, financially distressed city. That affects your bond rating. That affects a lot of things. It affects whether companies might want to come and move here. And so removing that stigma has been huge. And I was thrilled to see the Scranton School District has also been released from recovery. I mean, you still have to go a couple of years afterwards. I guess you probation or whatever you want to call it,
Yeah, you know.
But, you know, that's an indication that we're heading in the right direction. And something that council did just prior before I got on council was that they have a dedicated, that the budget every year, they include all in each budget every single year, a debt reduction where they're, you know, working to pay off debt. And that's important. So I think financially we're starting to head in the right direction with that. I'm impressed with the number of grants that we're like, we got a list of all the grants that, you know, Eileen Cipriani and OECD that they've been working on. It's amazing. I wish I had the number here, but it's amazing how much money is being brought into the city through grants, just applying. If you don't apply, you're not going to get it.
And that's a very special and specific area an area of focus where you need someone who knows how to write an application for a grant.
That's exactly right. And we're very fortunate to have Eileen in that position, and she does a great job with that. So, you know, I think that's something that's positive. You know, some of the things we're working toward, they're working on a master plan for Naog Park. It's not moving quickly enough for me or my colleagues on council. And that's one where maybe the mayor and council have a difference about what they'd like to see up there. Like most council wants to see an actual swimming pool, and it doesn't seem like there's an appetite in the administration to see that happen other than like a small wading pool, with, I don't know, what are those sprinkler pad things called?
Sure. A splash pad.
Yeah. Splash pad. Yeah. Ed, you and I grew up around the same time. I was a little bit ahead of you. And I mean, I learned to swim at Naog Park, and you know, people say, you know, they're too costly to keep up. But I think that that's something like for us, the city of Scranton, to not have a major public pool at Naog Park is, I think it's a sin. And you know, that's something I'm going to continue to push for in that master plan. And not a splash pad. I don't care if they put a splash pad, that's fine. As long as there's a pool next to it where, you know, senior citizens, where the general public, children can go up there and enjoy and have free swimming in their city in one of the nicest parks in the area.
I think a little bit of the detail of the Naog pool complex, you know, kind of, there are some intricacies there that I believe get lost. And I think some people that would listen to this think it's an easier problem to solve than it actually is. We're not going to just wake up tomorrow. We're not going to wake up next year and have a pool there. There are a bunch of hurdles that have to be overcome to get this pool up and running. So what's a realistic timeline for the swim complex? I mean, it's going to be a few years, right?
It is. But for me, I would love to see it kick in the gear in the spring of 2024. I really, you know, it just, we can't continue to go year after year without a pool at Nanaug. And then the other problem is, you know, we have issues down, you know, at Weston Field and Weston Park, and the pools go down. We're literally down to four pools left in the city. Now you have Connell Park, you have Weston Park, Weston Field indoor and outdoor pools. And there's times when those are down. So we really need to make that a focus. And that's an area where we can really improve as a city. So, that's a focal point that I think we really need to try to improve upon.
Sure. And we could have, you know, the Taj Mahal of pool complexes, but we're still battling the workforce issue, you know, trying to get some folks up there to, you know, work as lifeguards and do the work. That's just, it's just not an easy job. And it's a revolving door. You're constantly, you know, it's a short gig, right? Maybe 6-8 weeks in the summer. And we're looking at mostly, you know, kids or younger folks that are going to do that job, that want to do that job. And I know it's not an easy position to fill. Nobody gets rich being a lifeguard. It's, you know, it's just not the easiest thing in the world to accomplish. So even if we had this brand new pool, there are still some challenges, I believe, that come with running it. And I don't think that's, I'm certainly not telling you anything that you don't know or something that you don't deal with day in, day out. It happens over the winter at Weston Field, right?
Right.
We battled the lifeguard issue there.
Exactly. And that's been a challenge trying to get lifeguards. And, the summer ends and kids are going back to college or going back to school, or, you know, they try to open the pools early and kids are still in school. And, you know, it's tough. It is tough.
Where are we with reassessment? I know it's a county project, but I would imagine that, you know, a lot of city residents are hopeful that some of this is going to work in their favor. But I think we're a long way from the finish line there. What kind of feedback are you getting on that project?
Some people are for it. Some people, you know, are against it. And it depends on, you know, what your situation is. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's supposed to be neutral. You know, it's not going to result in the county or the city gaining more funding. It's just about everybody, you know, equitable, paying your fair share. Exactly. So, you know, and it's, hey, I understand. I mean, some of the newer homes, you know, are they assessed properly? Maybe there's certain homes that have had all these massive improvements through the years and they haven't been reassessed since the 60s. So it's just about about equity. And, you know, ultimately some people end up having to pay more and others are going to pay less, more than likely. Some people likely won't even change. But I think it's important. I mean, I tell people outside of the city, we haven't had a reassessment since like 1968. They're like, what? Are you kidding me?
What's typical? How 20 years maybe?
Yeah, 10 to 15 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, from time to time, the topic of the Scranton School District comes up, and it's apparent how passionate you are about the district. I mean, you're a school district student. Your kids all went to Scranton Public Schools. You worked your way up through the district. You eventually ran the district. You have some pretty strong feelings about the way the district can and should be run. And you've said time and time again that kids can go to Scranton schools and get a great education. Talk a little bit about your passion for the district. I mean, you can't hide it. You're very pro public schools.
Well, and you know, interestingly enough, I remember sitting at a PAC meeting, which is a professional advisory council meeting at the NEIU, when I was superintendent at Lakeland. So I'd come back, you know, I was away for 3 years as the principal at Montrose, and then I became a superintendent again. And I remember we were having a discussion with all the superintendents from IU up in Archbold. And I think some people were surprised to hear me brag about the Scranton School District. Like, I guess most people thought I would be bitter, you know, after I left. But, you know, hey, don't get me wrong. I did not want to leave. But I, you know, at a certain point, I decided, you know what, it's time for me to move on. I did what I could do here under the circumstances, and now it's time to do something else. But, you know,
I've always had a vested interest in the Scranton School District doing well. And I'm number 7 of 8 children who have gone through the Scranton School District. And I always noticed this. My parents, who raised 8 children, they never complained about their taxes. I never heard my parents once complain about their taxes growing up. And I believe that my parents realized the benefit of having great public schools. And, you know, my mother was an active PTA mother in all the schools that we went to, and just a great supporter of the schools. That has carried over to me because, you know, my kids have gotten a great education. I have a daughter, it's a senior at Manhattan College now, and just got a text yesterday. She got the top medal for history at Manhattan College.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and she also got the medal for international studies. So, like, she is excelling. Like, it's unbelievable. And she got that as a result of the education she received at Scranton High School. And, you know, all the schools leading up to that, and, you know, she went through Whittier and then to South Intermediate and ultimately to Scranton High. And the same is true with Amelia and Alexander. They're doing extremely well, and they're challenged. I mean, it's funny. Amelia is a senior now, and Alex is a junior, and they both pretty much taking the same courses. And a couple of weeks ago, Amelia goes, "Alex, how come you could go to bed every night at 10:30? She goes, "Last year when I was a junior, I'd be up till 1:30 in the morning studying." And Alex said, "I think that's a you problem."
Yeah, there you go. A little sibling rivalry. And, but you know, it's very easy for citizens, for taxpayers. And look, I get it because I'm a citizen. I'm a taxpayer. Sure. It's very easy to target the administration and say, you know, they make this mistake, they make that mistake, they move slowly. Maybe they don't move at all. It's very easy to get hung up on the administrative side of things. But when you get down into the nitty gritty of the schools, where the kids are in the classrooms getting the education, it's very hard to fault the Scranton School District. We have some amazing students and some amazing opportunities for these kids.
We do. And, you know, I've always said this, no matter what school district I work for or what school I worked in, you know, the parts equal the whole. So, like, in order to provide a great education, you need to have a high functioning school board, high functioning administration, high functioning teaching staff, and parents and students that value education, and they're all willing to work together, you know, for a common cause. And you know, in Scranton, we have great teachers, we have great programs, we have probably more AP courses offered at Scranton High School and West Scranton High School than are offered at some of the private schools in our area. And you know, and they're challenging those courses. We have kids that'll graduate with 15 to 18, sometimes 21 college credits, as a result of taking AP courses and passing them, and or participating in dual enrollment classes, which are offered, you know, at both of our local high schools.
It really is amazing. And we don't hear enough about that. No. It really not at all. I had you talking about all business, but I'm going to shift gears here a little bit to let you talk about some stuff that I know is fun for you. Something near and dear to you is the Steamtown Marathon. You're the founder. You're someone who has been connected to the local running community since you were a kid. And I know it's a labor of love, but tell us how you came up with the idea for the marathon and how long it took for you to make that happen. It didn't happen overnight.
No, it didn't.
And you didn't just dream it up one night at, you know.
No. Well, actually, you know, I ran the Boston Marathon. It was the last marathon, competitive marathon that I ran in 1993. And I actually got 59th in the 93 Boston Marathon.
I brag about that, so, by the way. I know a guy who finished in the, you know, the top 60 of the Boston Marathon. That's an impressive feat. But so you're a marathon guy.
Well, what I picked up from that, I was fortunate. Steve Spence was a good friend of mine. He was on the Olympic team. So when I was in Boston, he got me on the elite bus. I got to go up in an air-conditioned bus. I got to stay inside a church up there instead of sitting out in the field waiting for hours. But what I noticed about the Boston Marathon, I was like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. You're running from town to town, Natick into Framingham, and working your way through each of the towns, working your way down into Boston, and the people out there supporting you. It was just like such positive energy, and I'm like, wow. We could do that. We could do this in Scranton. So when I came back, I talked about it. And they're like, no way, can we do this? Blah blah blah. So I'm going to credit a guy from. He used to be the executive director of the Scranton Cultural Center. His name was Colin Bissett. Colin Bissett approached me at the time. I was the president of Scranton Organized Area Runners, SOAR. And he said, listen, Billy, we'd like to put on this, you know, this marathon. He was from England. He goes, I'm going to put on this marathon and, you know, we'll do the fundraising and the advertising and you guys put the race on. So we got together with our group and we decided we'd, you know, design a course. And I remember driving to Carbondale and I'm like, oh, that's only like 19 miles. What?
We're 7 miles or yeah, 6 miles short.
Right. I'm like, what's above Carbondale? We found Route 171 and drove up there and we found Forest City. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I knew Eddie Osborne, who was a coach up there. And we created a course that ran through 14 communities, very similar to Boston. And, you know, after 6 months, it was June of 96. I picked up the paper. I was vice principal at Scranton. I see Colin Bissett resigns from the cultural center. I'm like, oh man.
Oh no.
So I called over there. I talked to Carol Fells, who was the assistant. She's like, oh, Bill, we're canceling the marathon. I'm like, wait, you didn't tell the press that, did you? She's like, no. I said, let me meet with our guys and see what we can do. So we met at Farley's, which doesn't exist anymore.
Sure.
That Friday night. We gave ourselves 2 weeks to raise money. We raised $12,000 in 2 weeks. I went and met with the president of WNEP and met with Time Shamrock, and they said, we'll stay on as your sponsors. It was Warren Reed at Channel 16 at the time. And Warren and I sat there. He goes, well, Bill, what do you want? Initially, it was going to be to benefit the cultural center. And he goes, what do you want this race to benefit? And we both almost exactly the same time said St. Joseph Center.
I was going to ask you about that. They from day one, they were the group, the children's hospital that you said right from the start, you wanted to benefit them.
Right. And there was no debate. It was like perfect. Cause you know what I said, each of us were very fortunate. And I have a healthy family, I have healthy kids, and we're blessed in so many ways. And when all you have to do is take one tour through St. Joseph Center and you see that the work that all the employees up there do and the nuns at the IHM, and they are just so compassionate. And how could you pick somewhere else after you do a tour through there? They just do such a great job with the children and young adults.
It was always a big motivational part of the race too, when the runners would go by and I don't know. So I see the part of the race that goes past my house now, but that, does that still happen to the some of the kids get to come out and
the residents from St. Joe's come out?
Yeah.
We put them, Sister Mary Alice Jacquinot and her staff, they bring the patients out to the corner of, Electric Street and, it's Electric and, North Washington Avenue.
Yep.
And, that's just at the 24 mile mark and people come up like that's, wow. It's a hill.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody complains about that one hill. They don't give me credit for the first 23 and a half miles downhill.
Yeah, you could have reversed the course and finished it in Forest City, right?
Right. So,
no, but that's pretty cool, though. I mean, that's what do you need to get you across the finish line there? You see some kids that you know are just appreciating the effort, and every single person on that course is essentially a fundraiser.
Right. They absolutely are. And we've raised, I think it's at $2.2 million now for St. Joseph Center. And the other thing that has resulted from that is the economic impact that the marathon has had on the city of Scranton, and not only the city of Scranton, but the surrounding areas here, because we have runners come from typically between 40 and 45 states every year, a few countries. They stay at our hotels, they eat at our restaurants, they go to our gas stations, they spend money here. And typically runners will show up with their family, so they may go over to the Steamtown National Historic Site. They go to the Steamtown Mall. They're going, shopping here. And, we get nothing but positive feedback about our area. And this is something that I said in city council last week. Someone got up and complained that there's nothing to do in the city of Scranton. I said, well, if you think there's nothing to do in the city of Scranton, I said, you're not looking. And I went through a litany of the things that are now available. Now, there might not have been much to do when we grew up here, Ed. But I will tell you, things have changed.
Sure.
And I have a friend, John Sinclair, who comes from Colorado every year. He's a world-class runner. He only comes here once a year for the marathon. He speaks at the marathon. He does the announcing at the finish line and helps, our staff, and he's a volunteer. And he said, King, I've been coming here 25 years. He goes, I can't believe the way that this city has changed over that 25-year period, and in a positive way.
Right.
So sometimes, you need to step outside yourself, and you bring people in that aren't from here, they appreciate it more than we do. So,
It's a great event, and you know, I know the runners, I've spoken to the runners, photographed the runners over the years. They appreciate the way the communities come out and support this. It's almost like every little nook and cranny along the way, every little neighborhood, every little town has their own take on the marathon and how to celebrate it. So you've got people in costumes and marching bands and just cheerleaders and parties and DJs. Yes. Yes, it's a pretty cool event. It's a 26 mile long event. You know,
it's not for the faint of heart. You know, they say that if you've completed a marathon, you are in only 1% of Americans have ever finished a marathon. So you're in unique. I say you're world class. If you finished a marathon, it's tough. It's a long way.
Man, there are some things that I like doing that I don't want to do for 3, 4, or 5 hours, depending on how fast you're running the marathon. And so, you know, running a marathon, running for, 3, 4, or 5 hours is just, wow, just brutal. It's obvious that you still have a great love for running. And I see you at meets. I see you at races. I see you've got a stopwatch, all the school records, who all the runners are. What makes running such a great sport?
Running, one of the greatest things about, probably to this day, my best friends are runners. Because when you go out and you do 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 miles with an individual, you get to know them inside and out. You know their strengths, their weaknesses, their sense of humor, what ticks them off. And they get to know you. And, I love that aspect of it. I love the aspect of camaraderie like that. But the other piece is you don't need anybody to be a runner either. It's one of those sports where you can pretty much do your whole life if you choose to do it your whole life. It obviously helps your heart rate. It helps your blood pressure. It helps every aspect of your body. But I was very competitive in my days when I competed and I loved it. And to this day, as I said, some of my best friends are high school teammates and college teammates. And I'm telling you, I'm as close to those guys now than I've ever been. And I just think it's a great sport. And
yeah. You all feel the same pain. You all know what everybody's up against, from the time you were in high school and college and then right through your professional career, with the work you've done with the marathon and professionally, you've always been, as far back as I can remember, which takes you back to your high school days, you've always been in the public eye. And I don't know if I was surprised when you announced your campaign for council, but I did wonder if living in the public eye for such a long period of time ever gets exhausting for you, or you're just used to it now and it's just part of everyday life.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that it was something that I pursued. I feel like I just ended up there. One thing I noticed throughout my career, anything I got involved with, I typically ended up being the president or vice president, or had some kind of leadership role, or the captain of the team, or the president of this, or the vice president of that, or it just, I don't know. Maybe it was, I was an Eagle Scout when I was in high school, and I was captain of my high school cross country and track team. Same thing in college. I was vice president of the senior class. I don't know. It's just, maybe
you're kind of wired that way.
Maybe I'm a control freak. Now you're starting to get into psychology here. Maybe.
Well, yeah, I won't go too deep into that, but it's clear that you embrace something, you get passionate about it, and you decide you're going to go out and tackle it and do it. And council, in my mind, had I spent some time thinking about, okay, what's Bill King's next move? I think an easy guess would have been, well, maybe he wants to, go back and do something with the school district or on the school board. But I don't think I was thinking big enough. So when you decided to run for council, I thought, I didn't expect that, but it does kind of make sense for what you just said. You like the leadership role and you like planning and you like organizing. So, what better way to do it, I suppose, than helping run a city?
Well, and I think probably one of my skills sets is that I think I'm a pretty good communicator. And I get along with pretty much everybody. Hey, on council, you have 5 different people and you have 5 different opinions. But at the end of the day, I truly believe everybody on that council wants the same thing. We're all looking to improve the city of Scranton. And we may have different ideas as to how to get there. But at the end of the day, if a vote goes 3-2 my way or somebody else's way, we still get along. We walk out of those chambers and it's like, okay, well, on to the next thing. You know, I expressed my concerns and my opinion and, you know, I lost the vote. Fine. We move on to the next thing. That to me is a sign of maturity. It's a sign yeah. of experience, and it's a sign of, okay, hey, you lost this one, but you know, there's other battles to fight. But at the end of the day, you know, I am going on council, and just like any job I've ever had, any venture that I've gotten involved in, my goal is to leave the place in better shape than when I got there. And I want to be able to have an impact on my community. And that's really my goal. I don't really have any other political aspirations other than do this and, you know, hopefully leave City Hall in a better place than when I got there.
Well, you sort of answered the question I'm about to ask you. And my thinking was that you're going to make me wait a year or two to give me an answer. You almost just answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So is it too soon to talk about you and plans for another office or a higher office, or you're just laser focused right now on the job at hand?
Yeah, I'm really just focused on what I'm doing now. And I'm telling you, when I sit here, I have no aspirations. I'm not looking, oh boy, hey, you know, commissioner would be great down the road or mayor would be, that's not even considering any of that. I'm really focused on trying to do the most, have the biggest impact I can in the position that I'm on in right now. And, you know, I'm not totally discounting that, but I'm 60 years old now. My kids are, they're a year and a half from an empty nest here. And, you know, I'm going to want to make sure I get up. Amelia is going to be competing in college and track and cross country. And I want to get to some of those meets. And hey, who knows where any of us is going to be in 3-4 years, and who knows if we're going to be here tomorrow, frankly.
Right, sure.
Sad when I pick up the newspaper and look at the obituaries, how many people are passing away before they're 60. So I thank God for every day that I have. And while I'm here, I plan to take advantage of my health and my ability to be able to have an impact on this city. And I'm going to do it until, you know, the day I walk out of City Hall for good.
As a guy who's known you for a long time as a taxpayer, as a citizen of the city, I appreciate that. I appreciate the passion that you bring to the job. Scranton City Council President, Seamtown Marathon founder, organizer, but not runner. You've never got a chance to compete in your own marathon, right?
That's correct. And people have really busted me about that. But I finish first every year because I'm in the lead vehicle.
I noticed that. I don't think you'd ever give that seat up. I think that's important for you to be there. The Scranton City Council President, Bill King, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ed.